Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of On3 Sports. Now get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk here with you on a Thursday morning. Thanks for joining us here, supertalk.fm or wherever it is that you get podcasts from. We appreciate you guys out there, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. Want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way with a trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse here in Starkville or at Brupolo over in Tupelo. Be a little weird, Robbie, if Brupolo was in Caesar.
At two Starbucks?
A2 Brute.
Oh, there we go.
There it is. Wherever you are in our great state, you can enjoy Strange Brew Coffee each and every morning. It's just a click away. StrangeBrewCoffeehouse.com. Pip Printing and Signs, reliable service for every business need. It just sounds like a good slogan. What it really means is this. They can get customers in the front door of your business. They have an incredible amount of selections for you in terms of signage, marketing materials, banners, graphics, brochures, whatever it is, they can get you taken care of. And best of all, if you're a Mississippi State fan, if you do business with Pitt Printing and Signs, you tell them you heard about it on Thunder and Lightning, 10% of your sale goes directly to the Bulldog Initiative in your business's name. You just became a Bulldog Initiative business, and you didn't have to spend an extra dime of your own money. Call Cam Baker at 601-499-5216. Tell him you heard about this on Thunder and Lightning. He will take care of the rest. When you need printing, call Pip today. College Corner, collegecornerstore.com is the place to find the maroon and white merchandise that you are looking for. It's a new era at Mississippi State, so be a part of it. Don't be sitting on the sidelines. Don't be hanging out in the past. We're not here to talk about the past. We're here to talk about the present, the future. And that future is a new polo from College Corner with the State Script logo on it. Two locations to serve you in the Jackson area, Ridgeland by Fleet Feet, Flowway by the Half Shell, or you can shop online, collegecornerstore.com. Restaurant Tyler, unfortunately, is renovating right now. So go to Ben 612. It's going to take me a couple of shows, Robbie, to get used to not saying Restaurant Tyler and then immediately having to pivot to Ben 612. I will get there.
Are you not supposed to talk about Restaurant Tyler anymore?
Well, they're not open. They're not open until middle of July.
You can still hype people up about it and get them excited for the middle of July.
But then it's just like, it's just a tease. Let's talk about Ben 612 and let's go there and eat lunch and eat dinner.
Okay. I'm not upset about it. I was just saying.
Why are you yelling at me?
I'm not.
Just calm down. It's going to be okay. I just don't understand why you're so angry all the time. You know, what did I ever do to you? Other than, show you love and take you under my wing and bring you here to this podcast where you and I have become the best Mississippi State podcast out there. Thanks to you. You are a big part of our success.
Oh, don't suck up to me now.
No, I'm just trying to, I'm trying to understand where you're coming from with all this anger.
I'm not angry.
No, it would make you feel better, I think. Do you know what I think it would be? A trip to Ben 612 and enjoying some awesome cheese fries, pizzas, tacos, or anything else great on the menu. Look at this menu here. Why do I not eat here more often? This menu is fantastic. I don't understand why I'm not going to Ben 612 more often. I'm going to change that very, very soon. You guys need to do it too. If you're going to Ben 612, you're thinking, okay, this is just a place I go late at night, go have a drink. It's a lot more than that at Ben 612. Go check them out there in the Cotton District and enjoy a great meal at Ben 612. I just don't get it. All I've done is be nice to you. This is how you repay me. Priority One Bank, 16 locations throughout Central Mississippi here to serve you. Let PriorityOneBank.com be your guide. Let them show you all of their locations on the website. Find one that's closest to you. If you live in Central Mississippi, there's going to be one nearby. But most of all, they're going to show you everything they can do to help work for your money. You worked for your money to get it to the bank. Let Priority One Bank take it from there. Let them show you how they can help you invest, manage your money, and put your family in a great position going forward. Again, the website is PriorityOneBank.com. Let Priority One Bank make you their priority. All right, what are we going to talk about here today? We got some MSU stuff to talk about, but the big issue in college sports today is this Texas A&M, Texas situation. First off, Robbie, am I supposed to believe? I have two questions that are, am I supposed to believe? The first one is, and you're muted, by the way, just so you know.
I know.
I was making sure.
Am I muted now?
No, you're not muted now. You're talking now.
Okay.
All right. So, first thing first, am I supposed to believe that if Texas A&M had won that game and won a national title, Schlossnagel was still going to Texas? Because that would have been the ultimate big brother, little brother move of all time. So am I supposed to believe that?
I don't know. But all I know is this is insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I would ever recover from my team losing the national championship less than 24 hours later. My coach is leaving, and the team he's leaving for, by the way, is the team that I despise more than anything in the world.
I don't even know that it's the national championship is necessary. You know, if Mullen had left after the Egg Bowl in 2017 to go to Ole Miss, I mean, what are we doing? We would have been on mass suicide watch.
But you will never recover from this as a school, like the argument, like big brother, little brother thing. You'll never be able to live this down.
No, it's over.
That you just played for a national championship in Texas, and Texas came in and immediately stole your coach.
Mm-hmm.
But that and the fact that the dude is just lying through his teeth at every second is just – this guy has exposed himself as, like, not a very good guy.
Yeah.
And that's been the reputation that he's had with some people. A lot of people in the coaching circles will tell you no, but I've heard from some people that have said he's not a great guy. And this is kind of hard not to believe that at this point when you're seeing some of the stories. A Texas A&M writer came out today and said that he went after the dude that asked the question after the press conference and was, like, berating him in the hallway outside of the press conference room. And that kind of goes back to my point that I made the other night. It made people really mad. People get really upset, like, about the media. And I think that goes back to a little deeper conversation that's had in social circles these days. But people get really upset about the media, like, pushing back against coaches and stuff. These guys make millions of dollars a year.
Mm-hmm.
What excludes them from getting those kind of questions? That's one of the biggest stories that was coming out of the college football circles during the national championship was that Schlossnagel was up for that job at mm-hmm. Texas. And I realize that's a really bad time to ask a question like that and, you know, all the things that are happening. But when else is he going to be asked something like that? You're not going to talk to him again. If they make that hire, you will never hear from him again.
Right. And the other side of that coin is if they don't make the hire, the next time you talk to him is in the fall when it's like it's irrelevant.
Yeah.
So that is literally the only chance you have to get that question in. So here's the other one for you, Robbie. So, and you've kind of already hit on it, but am I supposed to believe that Jim Schlossnagel arrived back in College Station still fully committed to Texas A&M and in the course of 12 hours decided to take the job at their biggest rival? I'm supposed
to. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Yeah, coaching hires are made, as we know, within a 10-hour time period. Mm-hmm. That happens all the time, doesn't it? No, this was – even Kendall Rogers reported, who has a great relationship with both Texas and Texas A&M, even he reported that this deal was done during the regular season, that they had already started talking during the regular season.
Yeah.
So this guy was – so to come out, like, after the fact and say, well, I was just, you know, looking out for my players. No, you weren't, dude. You were not looking out for your players. While your players were competing during the season, you were looking at another job. And – he has the right to do that. He has the right to look at other positions. It's, you know, his livelihood and, you know, it's a lot of money. I get that. But don't try to, you know, virtue signal and, you know, act like this reporter is a bad guy. Anybody that wants to know the answer to this stuff is a bad guy. When you're out there actively searching for jobs during the middle of the season, that's why I have a hard time really getting upset about recruits wanting to go or wherever they want to go in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Who are coaches to be upset about that when they're doing the same exact thing? So it's a business, but don't come out there and try to embarrass this guy and act like this guy's a bad person for asking that question. Everybody wanted to know where things stood in that coaching search. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to know what Jim Schlossnagel's position was on it. All he had to do in that situation is say, you know, I really don't want to talk about something like that right now. We just finished our season. Mm-hmm. So, it's no disrespect or anything like that. It's just I'm not thinking about any of that stuff right now. I'm trying to get, you know, talk to my guys and kind of process this moment. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, you don't have to disrespect the reporter, which is what he did. And he apologized today, of course, you know, while he's in Austin. By the way, this guy would make an incredible professional wrestler. I mean, yes. he can play a character like none other. This guy is just making it up as he goes. Fantastic promo work from Jim Schlossnagel.
Just lying at every turn.
Everything that comes out of this guy's mouth is a lie. I mean, it won't be tough to recruit because at the end of the day, it's Texas and you want to be successful. Players want to play there. But if recruiting was like really based off of how you feel about what a coach says, how could anybody play for this guy? You can't trust him for a second. You know,
that's what I've always wondered about these coaches that have been caught like lying and like it's all out there. They're still able to recruit.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty crazy.
And, you know, for me, it's just ridiculous. This is why I've never, like you said a minute ago, I never get upset about the transfer portal because the coaches can do stuff like this. If A&M fans were mad that Schlossnagel went to Austin, how are they going to feel when Lavalette and Grahovic are there later this year? Because that's probably going to happen now. Just a unbelievable turn of events. There in College Station, and now we got to see what the next domino is. Who goes to A&M?
Yeah, the one that makes the most sense to me is probably Tadlock at Texas Tech.
Yeah,
I think that makes a lot of sense to me. Just being a Texas guy, I've always heard he's not going to leave the state of Texas.
Yeah.
That's a big step up as far as university is concerned. But it's also like it's been increasingly harder to hire sitting Power Five head coaches. Now you have the
right.
You have obviously the guys like the teams like Texas that can do that.
Right.
And you know, LSU I think can do that. Go hire sitting Power Five coaches, but it's not as easy as it gets made out to be. You can't just write somebody a check and they sign up for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that the Texas A&M should be able to make a pretty good hire here. I'm interested to see who it is.
Yeah,
Tony Tadlock would be one of the guys that I would say is up there for it. I don't know. I don't know who else really makes a lot of sense. I think like you really need like a good fit, I think, there too. And Schlossnagel was a great fit. He's a
Tadlock,
you know, Texas
like
guy.
Good.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the. I mean, is that he's built that program and Texas Tech has been a good program through the years, but is he flashy enough at this point? You know, you really want to make a big hire, a splash hire, to make it almost look like you did better than Texas did. I don't know that you can't. I mean, you're not getting Vitello, so who are you getting?
Yeah, that's the thing. So
here's a question. This is a hypothetical for you, but the man cannot get over the hump as far as winning a national title at Arkansas. Would Van Horn leave?
But he's got a good job, man.
No, he does. I know he has a good job, but I mean, Schlossnagel had a good job. So, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody. You're not going to hire a coach from a bad job. Would O'Sullivan leave?
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
That would be a good hire. to get him
yeah,
out.
Yeah, it would be. I think that that's been kind of the elephant in the room for a long time is like Kevin O'Sullivan in another job. Like, I feel like he's been on the verge of going somewhere else for a while. And there was a time where I feel like Florida was ready to get rid of him. And this might have been the year, unless he made the run that he did, which, you know, was kind of like improbable there at the end.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be like that. That seems to be kind of a combustible situation at some point. And Texas A&M, obviously, they have way more support in baseball than Florida does from a fan base perspective.
Mm-hmm. About to have a new.
I don't know how much money Florida's putting in. I don't know how much money is Florida putting in. They built a new ballpark, but I mean they must be doing something because they're able to get some really good recruits out of the transfer portal, but. I don't know. I know A&M is getting ready to renovate that ballpark, and they're investing a ton of money. So I could see it. It wouldn't shock me at all. Wes Johnson was a guy that I thought might be a possibility too. He just signed an extension.
Yeah.
And I don't know if A&M wants to go get a guy that's just been a coach for 1 year, too.
Yeah. O'Sullivan's an interesting name for me. He's more realistic than Van Horn is, in my opinion. I'm just trying to think my way around. With Mingione?
Could be. I don't know. I mean, A&M, I think, is going to be shooting for the big fish here.
I mean, I agree with that, but I mean, they did win the conference this year. I mean,
outside of the last 2 years, yeah. Minge has not had a great run, but he's been really good the last 2 years.
Ooh, I got about John Cohen.
Pulling a sitting AD. He can act as the AD, too.
He can do both, yeah. He and Trev Alberts can work together.
The crazy thing about A&M is I don't think they've won a major championship in a men's sport since, like, the 30s.
1939.
In baseball, right?
In any sport.
It was football.
It's in any sport. They have not won a national championship in any sport, any men's sport.
But I'm saying that was football.
It was football, yes. Yes, you're correct. Yes, yes.
The amount of money that they've poured into that athletic department and they cannot get a championship is insane to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really is insane. They have had all the resources and have not come through with it. I don't get it.
Just
but a lot of it is like the way that things are run there are just out of whack. Like if you look at how, if you look at how, like, you start breaking stuff down with how they've managed money there and they've managed coaching hires and AD hires, like, I can see why it's been kind of a problem. As we speak, there's like a new A&M person in the portal
every time I refresh Twitter, there's a new guy going to the portal.
The Hayden Schott guy that.
Yeah.
That was really good this year. Outfielder. He's in. Jace Lavalette's in.
Aiden Sorrell just went in.
Oh.
I mean,
this is rough, man.
And I'll just go ahead and tell you that if he wasn't going to be a high pick, if he had another year, Braden Montgomery would be in there too. So,
yes.
I mean, there's just no question. So maybe now Mississippi State could get him. I don't know. So let's see.
Still would not have faith.
Yeah. Let's change gears here and let's go over to Mississippi State and let's talk a little football recruiting because the big news from yesterday, the number one player in the state, one of the top players in the country, Caleb Cunningham, announced yesterday he's going to make a July decision. He put out his top six. As you might guess, Mississippi State was among those teams. This is the guy that for months has been saying he was going to make his decision closer to signing day. Does an early decision benefit or Mississippi State or are you concerned that there might be a commitment coming to another school?
I still wonder if he'll actually go through with that, but no, I don't think an early decision is good for Mississippi State as far as getting that commitment. But if he decides early, I still don't think that is going to be over. I think this is going to go down to signing day with them.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reason for all the crystal balls and RPM predictions and all that stuff is he literally came out and said, like, Alabama's number one. He's been telling people he's going to commit to Alabama pretty publicly. But what people have to realize about Caleb, I feel like I keep harping on this, is he has been very impressionable after these visits. Everywhere he has been, he has told people that's where he's going. Auburn has been one that's kind of stood the test a little bit. That's been one that he's consistently said he likes a whole lot, even after, you know, taking visits elsewhere. Auburn has been one that's consistently been up there, and I think Alabama's going to be up there too. But I expect Mississippi State to be there in the mix as well. I mean, this is a kid that has been on campus probably 24 times at this point in the last year. And to completely dismiss that as just ignoring trends, I think that he's getting very excited about seeing things outside of the state of Mississippi and seeing things, you know, outside of Starkville in this area. And I think that's probably pushed State on the back burner a little bit. And they're probably not as sexy as a school to him at this point. But I think at the end of the day, Mississippi State's going to be in the game on signing day because of Jeff Lebby and because of Chad Bumpus. I think relationships are going to be a big part of things down the stretch. And I think talking to his family about you're 30 minutes away from seeing your son whenever you want to see him, I think that's going to matter. But right now, I would say State's probably been pushed to the back burner. Like, I've seen this before. I've seen this movie before with kids that are from around this area. They start seeing the sights. They start talking to coaches outside of Mississippi, and their mind ventures to those places. But I've also seen at the end of the day, they come back home. So we'll see if that transpires. I feel like Mississippi State is going to be in the fight for him the whole way. And I think Chad Bumpus and Jeff Lebby will be a big part of it. And showing that your offense is capable of doing big things is going to be a very big part of that. You know, State was not able to do that for guys like A.J. Brown, you know. So I think that's important. It's really important for Mississippi State to show that they can put up some big numbers there this year offensively to combat the Alabamas and the Auburns and Floridas of the world.
It just hurts in that Mississippi State could use a guy like Caleb Cunningham to come on board and maybe rally other guys to come in with him. He and Kamario Taylor would be a great 1-2 combination to help recruit other talent to Mississippi State. And instead, it's going to be a situation where you kind of just know you might be right in that in the end, he ends up at Mississippi State. He ends up being closer to home. But at the same time, like it was a missed opportunity for Mississippi State to get him in early, to get him locked in and have him sort of, you know, not only that, I mean, that just puts a lot of national attention on your class. You have that one day where he commits to you and everybody's like, Mississippi State has done this and this is Jeff Lebby's first big recruiting win. It'd be a lot of positive publicity. It'll still be there at the end, but at the end, although there is the publicity. There's no extra benefit to it of other recruits seeing that and going, well, I want to be a part of that. You know, that's how recruits are sometimes. You get one domino to fall, and then two or three will come with them. So, gotta be and your first thing you said is probably could be accurate as well. Is, you know, it could be a situation where he comes back in a couple weeks. He's like, I decided to wait, and you know, whatever it is. One thing has held true, and we called it a few weeks ago. Wherever he visits, that's his number one school that week. So
yes,
if he sets a commitment date, you better hope you've got the visit before that, so you can be number one on the list when he gets there. I don't know if he's just highly impressionable or if he's just really smart. If he just knows, hey, if I say I'm number one, everybody's going to be firing me up, and then the other schools will be trying to get me back. I mean, he might have just cracked the code on how recruits should handle everything. Never give anything away. So kudos to him.
He's a really simple kid. I just think he's very impressionable. I mean, this is a guy that's hardly left Ware in Ackerman, Mississippi during his life. I mean, he's just, other than playing ball, you know, around the state, he hasn't experienced stuff like this. And I don't blame him. And I really don't see, like, what else State could have done to try to get his commitment at this point. They've had him on campus a ton. They've really pushed him. They sent the whole staff to one of his basketball games. Nobody's done anything like that. I don't know what else they could have done at this point. So I think it's just – you just got to play it out. I mean, you're just going to have to let his recruitment kind of play out and see what happens.
Let's move into the rest of the show that's brought to you by our friends over at the Mississippi Beef Council, who want to remind you that beef, it is what's for dinner. you're cooking out this week. You shouldn't be cooking out right this second. In Starkville, I can hear the thunder outside. But other than that, you need to be checking out the grill. Nothing beats the sizzle of beef. So this weekend and next weekend, it's the 4th of July, it's time to put some beef on the grill. And if you're doing something small, burgers and steaks, God bless you. But if you want to go big with a tri-tip or even a brisket or something like that, even better. Nothing better than the smell of beef on the grill. Make that be your cookout this weekend. Beef, it's what's for dinner, thanks to our friends at the Mississippi Beef Council. Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District is the place to find the smoked Southern soul food that you are looking for. And you are looking for it. You want to eat good when you're in Starkville. You need to come to Two Brothers and enjoy some fantastic food there. Or you want to enjoy an upscale experience. Yeah, at fine dining, if you will. Then you can enjoy a fancy sandwich at the Older Brother. I haven't been to the Older Brother this week. I think I'm going to go this weekend for sure and go grab me a fancy sandwich. And Robbie, you're welcome to join me. I would hope that you would, because we're such good friends.
I would gladly join.
Despite the fact that you yelled at me earlier. I just forgive. I'm a forgiver.
That was a fake yell.
Fake yell. Oh.
People can't tell the difference between my fake yells and my real yells. That's how good I am at it.
I can't tell the difference. I have seen actual angry Robbie. And yeah, I know when he's around. I've run into that.
Sometimes I need a Snickers.
You do. I can't have one.
You can't have a Snickers?
I mean, I can have a Snickers. I shouldn't have one.
Oh, well,
what
I shouldn't either, but it's
what
vacation.
I should have, though, is a fancy sandwich. And I think I'm going to go get one this weekend at the Older Brother in the Cotton District. Great products, great service. Every business likes to promise it to you. They deliver it to you at Advantage Business Systems. They've been doing it now for 49 years. 49 years of taking care of their customers. 49 years of providing great products to their customers, and then backing them up with great service after the sale. You don't have time to wait. If a copier or a printer goes down and you got to get it replaced, can you wait a week to 10 days? Most businesses, I don't know, they can do that. You don't have to do it with Advantage Business Systems. They can take care of your issues a lot of times the same day because they're in Mississippi just like you. 601-362-9192, or you can visit them online at absms.com. Find out how Advantage Business Systems will help your business do business. Before you're at the games this fall, you need to be at Maroon & Co. When you're in Starkville and you're looking for Mississippi State gear, Maroon & Co. is the place to go. They have an incredible selection, stuff you cannot get anywhere else. They've got all the logos that you want. Most importantly, they can save you a little money with our promo code THUNDER15. Use it at checkout, in the store, or online at maroonco.com. 15% off regular priced items. Some exclusions do apply. Before you head to the games this fall, head to Maroon & Co. Third edition of our opponent preview series as we work back to front. And we are talking about the Tennessee Volunteers, a team that, Robbie, when we get to them, might surprise you how much I think of them this year. I think they're going to be right there in the playoff mix. Again, we talked about it, you know, I don't have them as a title contender, but I definitely think they're a playoff contender. Let's get a little bit more information on the Volunteers. And also, I asked a question about Jeff Lebby in year one and what to expect, because I think Josh Heupel's year one might be a good example to set by. I talked to Ben McKee earlier today from Go Vols 24/7, fresh back from Omaha, ready to talk a little college football. It's week, 10 in the opponent preview series, but as you know, we're going backwards. So we're talking about Tennessee today and the Volunteers, who I think are going to be one of the best teams in the country. I was surprised by how highly I thought of them when I sat down and did my my schedule predictions just a few weeks back. Ben McKee joins us from Go Vols 24/7, who's been a busy man this week, as you might guess, covering a national championship up there in Omaha. I'm sure, just real quick, you know, how was that trip? Did you enjoy yourself?
I did. Omaha is the absolute best. Not sure if you've been able to make it up there.
I have. It's awesome.
It is the best. Were you there through the entire national championship run?
I was there in 19. I didn't make it in 21, unfortunately.
Okay, yeah, it's a long time. I was there today, marked 2 weeks, so I got back late last night. But it's the best, the absolute best, as you know.
Yeah.
And really cool to see Tennessee fans, how they've adopted it as Tony Vitello has grown his baseball program, and it was a really cool celebration. earlier this week, I guess Monday night. But it was awesome, as you know. It doesn't get much better in sports than that, especially at the college level.
Yeah, we have the Omaha Dogs, the Omaha Hogs. We have Omaha from Ole Miss. We have Omaha from LSU. What are y'all going with? Volmaha?
Omavals.
Omavals. Okay.
You got to have the hashtag, you know, you got to have, you can't be, especially if you go 3 times in 4 years and back to back years, you have to have an official slogan or the official Omaha tag. So it was Omaha Vols.
Got it. All right. I'm going to let you do a public service for my listeners and in some ways for me as well. Pronounce the name of Tennessee's starting quarterback.
Ooh, you're going to put me on the spot. I think I have it down pat. But when he first committed, I was saying it what I thought was the correct way, and come to find out, it was not the correct way. So I've had to rework my brain. Nico Iamaleava.
There it is. Now we have it. I'm just going to refer to him as Nico. And
yes, that's what Tennessee fans are doing. The difficult part of that last name is there's a couple of different A's in there, mm-hmm. and they're supposed to sound differently. And that's where my tongue and brain just do not go together.
Yeah. We're from the South. It doesn't right. click for us. I don't know that there's a team in the country where ceiling and floor are more determined by how their quarterback does. There are some quarterbacks who, you know, some teams where the quarterback can just be good and they'll be okay. I think Tennessee really needs Nico to be great for them to get where they want this year. And if he's not, I think they could struggle. You know, am I putting an unfair expectation on a redshirt freshman who hasn't seen a ton of experience, or do you feel like he can step in and give Tennessee the kind of season that Hendon Hooker gave them a couple years ago?
No, I think that is a fair expectation. And from the outside looking in, I think you're absolutely spot on. And this offense needs him to be special, be the five-star quarterback that he was. He was arguably – it was him or Arch Manning as the number one quarterback in their class. And obviously Tennessee people believe that Arch Manning was the number one quarterback for one reason and one reason only. So they like to claim that Nico was the number one
quarterback. Hey, they benefited from that a few decades ago. They can get around that.
Yes, and they're fine with that. So, but they, you know, fans got to say, oh, he was only the number one overall quarterback because his last name. But Nico was neck and neck with Arch, and they need him to be that. They need him to live up to the billing. So I think it is fair to say that, hey, they need him to be great. Because Joe Milton, he wasn't bad, and he got too much of the blame. He didn't have as much help around him as Hendon had. But Hendon was certainly the better quarterback. I don't think there's any debating that. And Tennessee needs Nico to be closer to Hendon than Joe. And I think that will be the case. And I think that's the feeling in the building as well. They're not necessarily wording it that way out of respect for Joe. But yes, they need him to be great. And I get the sense that they think he is going to be great. A lot of people in that building, to steal a term from the kids, these days, they believe that he is him. They believe that he is going to be just top notch, and they have no concern or no worry about how he's going to translate to the full-time starter, because he has truly impressed everybody from the moment he stepped foot on campus and put the work in. Great teammate, great leader, very quiet, as quiet as a quarterback can be, obviously. Just goes about his business. Just wants to be another one of the guys, doesn't want to be the focal point that you would think for a five-star quarterback. So, yes, they need him to be great, and it would be surprising if he's not. For me, it's weird to say, because this will be his first time as a starting quarterback, the full-time starter, and he still needs to go prove himself. But I have more concerns around him, and my bigger question with the offense is whether people will step up around him and help him elevate the offense back to what it was 2 years ago, rather than being concerned about how Nico is going to be as a full-time starter.
I love Tennessee's receiving core. You know, McCoy, I love Squirrel White. Maybe my favorite, one of my favorite players in the SEC this year. I think Dylan Sampson at running back is underrated. He's a guy that, you know, he averages 6 yards a carry for his career. You know, he's a 1,000-yard rusher in his career. He's got 13 career touchdowns. He's a good back. But you don't ever hear his name mentioned among the elite running backs in the conference. How good can he be in this offense this year?
Oh, he can be the best running back in the SEC. Certainly one of the best. I don't think that you can name three better than him in the conference. I certainly don't think that you can name five better than him. And he has best running back in the SEC type of potential. And he's been a little bit overshadowed by Jalen Wright the last couple of years, especially this past season. And Jalen Wright landed in a nice situation in the draft with the Dolphins, and the Dolphins using that speed and that system is going to be fun to watch. But he's been a little bit overshadowed. And the problem is, like, there's no depth behind him. And I know you're asking a Samson-specific question, but that is kind of one of the concerns around Nico that you hope doesn't rear its ugly head if Samson gets banged up. And, you know, there's this illusion that Josh Heupel's offense is like an air raid because of the up-tempo pace. But Josh Heupel's best offense is they run the football equally as well as they pass it, if not better. And the offense kind of goes as the running game goes. So they need a huge year from Dylan Samson, and I think that he will deliver if he doesn't. And the other thing about Samson that people outside of Knoxville don't realize is just his leadership. I mean, he is by far one of the leaders on the football team, if not the leader. He has a very strong personality that people gravitate towards him. And he's in for a big season as long as he can stay healthy. And I do agree with that he is one of the underrated, not just running backs, but I'd say offensive skill players in the SEC going into the season.
One thing I don't think people know about Tennessee, because so much focus up there is on Heupel and the offense and how good it is that the potential number one pick in the draft plays for Tennessee on the defensive side of the ball in James Pierce. That guy is a freak of nature defensive player. You know, sort of let the world know a little bit more about that guy, because I think the average SEC fan doesn't know a whole lot about him.
Yeah, I think they're about to, because he should be in for just one heck of a season. He's probably the best edge rusher in college football. He's certainly in the conversation if you don't want to firmly label him as that. But you said it perfectly. He's just like an athletic freak. I mean, a guy that big should not be able to move as fast as he moves. And you saw that last season where just SEC offensive tackle after SEC offensive tackle were just not able to contain him off the edge whatsoever. And then even against Iowa, and we can make fun of Iowa's offense all day long, certainly, but they typically do have good offensive linemen, and their tackles just could not handle James Pierce Jr. whatsoever. I mean, he had a strip sack, he had a pick six, and was just constantly terrorizing Iowa's quarterback, as he did to the SEC throughout the season. So it's hard not to envision him going top five and top 10 in next year's draft at minimum, if he can stay healthy, if he can stay out of trouble, which he's a quiet kid and just kind of goes about his business. So I would be surprised if he did get in trouble, but you just never know nowadays, I guess. But if he can just avoid things like that, then at minimum he's a top five, top 10 pick. And quite possibly, if he can follow up this season what he did last season with a very similar season, then there's a really good chance that he ends up being the number one overall pick in the draft, and rightfully so, just because we obviously know that the edge rusher position is a premium position at both levels, and somebody that athletic playing that premium position, they don't sit on the board for too long.
This defense, let's sort of stick with that. You know, it's been a process since year one of Heupel. They were not good defensively his first season. They were pretty good these past couple of years. What's the ceiling on this defense in 2024?
Yeah, I don't know that it'll ever be, you know, what the offense is.
Mm-hmm.
But that is their goal. They don't. Another misconception that I think people have about Tennessee is that they just ignore defense. And that's not the case at all. It's just been kind of what you said. It's just been a path to reach even the point that they're at now, and they're still building. It was just, and it's so odd because Jeremy Pruitt was a defensive guy, but there was just not a lot to work with when Heupel took over, especially because of the transfer portal kind of getting going right then. Mm-hmm. You had the NCAA cloud hanging over the program from Pruitt. Like, it was the roster, the cupboard was bare. And they've had to rebuild, not only trying to get a starting 11 together that's capable, but now they're trying to build depth. And it is in a much healthier situation than it was a couple of years ago. And I thought they took a big step forward this past season by being a top 25-ish defense. And I think that's probably the floor, once again, when you have guys like James Pierce Jr. But they have James Pierce Jr. on the edge of a defensive line that – some consider to be the best in the country. They're still benefiting from the COVID year a little bit with a couple of guys like Amari Thomas and Bryson Eason. They've picked up some transfers, Jackson Moy from Stanford, and Omar Norman Lott last year from Kansas, and they have some other talented guys that they've recruited and are bringing along. So it's going to start with the defensive line and James Pierce Jr. off the edge. They also have a Joshua Josephs off the edge who can really play as well, and they're expecting a big offseason from him. At linebacker, you have a couple of talented young guys that you're hoping take a big step forward this offseason as well. And you get Keenan Peely, who is probably as old as you and I, still playing college football because he started at BYU and he's dealt with some injuries. He transferred in for his last season, but got hurt in the first game and missed the rest of the season. So he's going to have some rust to knock off, but he's a veteran and a thumper who should translate to the SEC pretty well, and they were pleased with what they were seeing from him in fall camp. So it's going to start with the front seven. They're going to have to lead the way. I do think the secondary is the biggest question, and I do think that they upgraded at corner. That's been their biggest bugaboo the last couple of years is the secondary play. It's been hit or miss. They've had some guys like Kamal Haddon, Theo Jackson step up and have some big-time seasons, but just hasn't been very consistent play from the secondary. And when the defense has struggled, that's typically been the issue. And so they went out and they got Jermod McCoy from Oregon State, and he was a big transfer that's expected to do some pretty big things. And Ricky Gibson, a young guy that they recruited, who actually picked Tennessee over Georgia, surprisingly. So they're expecting big things from him in his sophomore season. And they brought in some transfers at safety. If the secondary can click, then, I mean, I don't think it's crazy to think that it could have top 10-ish potential in the country for the defense. But it's all going to start with that defensive line that several people, again, think that it could be the best defensive line in the country because of how old the group is and how many players that they have. They have a lot of depth and experience and some talent. That goes a long way, that combination of things. So it's got to start there with the defense.
I don't know how old you are, but if anybody my age is still playing college football, we got some serious, serious questions to ask.
He can rent a car. We'll put it at that.
Buddy, I can do a lot more than that at my age. Tennessee has two of the most interesting games in September for me. The neutral site game with NC State, and then they travel to Oklahoma. I don't know if that's Oklahoma's first SEC game or not. I think that it is.
I believe that it is, yes.
So, yeah, so that's their first ever SEC game. Mississippi State gets to crack off Texas's first SEC game. So if they're 4-0 at the end of the month, I mean, they're going to be rolling at that point. They should be in the top 10. They have an interesting stretch where they play two of what I guess are Tennessee's biggest rivalry games, right? Florida and Tennessee are back-to-back, looking to get revenge on both of those teams. They beat them a year ago. And then you have that game with Georgia at the end of the season, or towards the end of the season. This schedule kind of sets up nicely for Tennessee to be able to get some early momentum. They have a couple of tough stretches, but all in all, when I look at this team, I just see a lot of wins. Where's the stretch on the schedule? What's the two-game or three-game stretch where you say, if they come out of that 2-1, 3-0, they are going to be rolling?
I think it's got to be September because you mentioned NC State and Oklahoma, and I just looked it up. Oklahoma, their first SEC game is against Tennessee and Norman the 21st, week 4. They play Temple, Houston, and Tulane to open the season.
Way to get ready for the conference, guys.
Yeah, big way to get ready for the conference there. But those two games, I just think will be very telling. So if they're 3-1 coming out of that September stretch with wins over NC State and Oklahoma, I think that would be very telling. Or even maybe if they split the two games and assuming that the loss would be competitive and, you know, not a black eye type of loss or anything along those lines, a pretty loss, not that I really think that there's ever such thing as a pretty loss, especially when you're in year 4 as the head coach. But I think it'd just be pretty telling because to me that would mean that Nico is playing to the level that people think that he's going to be playing at, especially if you can go to Oklahoma in your first SEC start and your first road SEC start and you can win in Norman against an Oklahoma team that Brent Venables seems to have rolling in the right direction pretty well right now. I think that would be a great sign, obviously, if Nico can handle that environment. But again, kind of those questions that I mentioned earlier, they need their skill position players, mostly receivers. Like they need the receiver room to step up and help Nico. They had a disappointing season a year ago, but have talent. So if they're able to win, I would assume that they're making plays. I would assume that that the defense and everything that I just talked about, it's clicking. The secondary possibly playing better than it has in the past couple of years. I imagine if you're able to win those games, that the defensive front is performing to the expectations that I just set on them. Because NC State, Oklahoma, don't know that they're – especially NC State, but even for Oklahoma, I don't know that they're at Georgia's level right now or Ohio State's, you know, ready to be one of the contenders, the front runners to win a national championship. But you know that they're going to be strong in the trenches. And I think that this team for Tennessee, they'll go as the trenches go. And if you can beat a tough NC State team and a tough Oklahoma team in that first month, that tells me that your football team's in a good spot going into October. But those two games that you mentioned, the back-to-back home games against Alabama and Florida, those will be some pressure cookers because of what those games mean to Tennessee fans and what it could potentially mean as you pursue a playoff spot if you do have a successful September. So I'm circling the month of September, not because it's my birthday month, but because I think it'll be very telling against two quality opponents how the season is how the direction of the season is going to go.
Let's ask it's more of a big picture kind of question here, because Josh Heupel, Jeff Lebby, they obviously work together. Lebby and Heupel's offenses are going to be very, very similar. Tennessee's first year, we sort of just talked about it. Offensively, they were outstanding. Hooker came in and was kind of an unknown quantity, had an incredible season, threw 31 touchdowns, only three picks. Defensively, though, like I said, they were not good this year, and that's kind of what you see at Mississippi State this year. There's a lot of questions on the defensive side of the ball. Based on what you know of Heupel and his first year in Knoxville, what should Mississippi State fans expect from Lebby in year one, if things can go in a similar fashion?
Yeah, I guess innovation, or I mean, for Tennessee fans, which I guess it would be similar for Mississippi State, following the unfortunate passing of Mike Leach, obviously, and the offense took quite the step back last year, from my vantage point from the outside looking in, just a different pace, right, from Leach to what it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
So you would expect the pace for this year under Lebby to be much more similar to Mike Leach. And that's kind of, to me, what the stark difference was for Tennessee, because you go from Jeremy Pruitt, where it was just like watching paint dry, watching them play offense under Pruitt. I mean, it was just absolutely miserable Tennessee play offensive football. And if I'm not mistaken, it was like that at times last year for State.
Painful is probably not a strong enough word. Death-like.
Yeah, I just think it's maybe going to be a shock to the system initially. I mean, I remember that first. I mean, you kind of got it was like we as the media dipped our toes in the water during fall camp, and you're like, wow, these guys are flying up and down the field. And then it got into the month of September and October, and it was just a shock to the system. I mean, jumping into the pool, cold water, first time touching the water, it was just a shock. So I think that's going to be the thing that stands out the most right away to the State fans, because Lebby and Heupel do run very similar things. They essentially run the same system, mm-hmm. But obviously each guy is going to have their own tweaks and own personality on it. But for Heupel, it was no easing into it. He wasn't good with just trying to get to a bowl game, six wins, and be happy with that. I mean, he wanted to truly go out there and compete as hard as he could for all 12 games that were guaranteed. And you saw the football team adopt that mindset as well. And Lebby strikes me as somebody who is similar to Heupel in that sense as well. So I just the thing that stands out about Heupel when I think back to year one is just how much of a shock it was to the system, how efficient his offense is for how simple it is, and just how fast that they do actually go. So I would imagine that stands out pretty early for State fans as well.
Yeah, so Pruitt's last full year, we won't count the COVID year. Tennessee scored 314 points in 13 games. Heupel's first year at Tennessee in 13 games, they scored 511 points. Yeah. So a little bit of a difference there. And I'm interested to see if Lebby can have similar results, and if you know, Blake Shapen can be similar to what Hendon Hooker was his first year in the system. So we'll see how that goes out. Ben, thanks so much for your time. Always appreciate it. Always a lot of great info when you come on with us. Ben McKee from Go Balls 24/7. We'll see you later this season, man.
Absolutely. I appreciate you as always.
So, Robbie, you know, Tennessee, we'll worry about that when the time comes. I want to talk a little bit about what I was asking there at the end with Ben. So, Pruitt's last full season at Tennessee,
2019. Obviously, you know, they had the COVID year the next year. They were 8-5. They only scored 314 points total. They were offensively, they were just not a great football team that year. Very average. Very, very average. First year for Tennessee for Josh Heupel, they scored 511 points in 13 games. They scored basically 200 more points per game, an average of just about 10 points. They must have about 15, 16 points a game. I mean, two touchdowns in all likelihood. Now, defensively, it took a big step back. They gave up 100 more points. But this is the points scored in 2019. 30, 26, 45. That's against the FCS school. 3, 14, 20, 13, 41 against South Carolina. That was their best offensive game of the year against the Power 5 team. 30, 17, 24, 28, 23. Fast forward to 2021. This is the scoring. 38, 34, 56, 14. They had a bad game there. 62, 45, 26, 24, 45, 17. That was against Georgia. 60, 45, 45. Now, they had some losses in there. They lost to Purdue in the bowl game, 48, 45. They scored 24 points at Alabama, but gave up 52. They scored 34 points on Pitt, but gave up 41. But, Robbie, they were 7-5 in the regular season and then lost their bowl game. They were obviously a very exciting football team. If State can somehow model itself after that, they're going to be just fine in year one under Jeff Lebby.
No doubt. I remember that year thinking, you know, they might not be coming through with the results from the wins and losses standpoint. That's going to be a really good team. Mm-hmm. They gave Alabama a run, I think, that year, and mm-hmm. it felt a lot like, to me, Dan Mullen, mm-hmm. which is what we're hoping out of Jeff Lebby this year. But you saw, even though Heupel actually got them to a bowl game, Mississippi mm-hmm. State wasn't able to get to win under Dan Mullen. But
you got to remember his schedule that year was incredibly difficult.
Yeah, it was. So that's what it felt like to me is like it felt like everybody in Knoxville was really excited about the future, and they were putting things on the field that you could see kind of the early workings of a program that was going to be really good. And then the next year, of course, they beat Alabama, and then last year they have another chance to beat Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that they haven't done in decades, two decades, I guess.
Was it a 16-game winning streak for Alabama? I think that got snapped in 2022. I think that's what it was.
It was a long one, man. And so that was something that nobody had been able to do at Tennessee for quite some time. So I do like the opportunity there for Jeff Lebby to do something similar. Maybe not go to a bowl game this year. Mm-hmm. That's the goal, though, is to get to at least 6-6 and see what happens. But put something on the field like Josh Heupel did in that first year, which is basically same type of offense. Put something on the field that people can get really excited about. And it's not just, you know, same old for Mississippi State offensively, where there's just not a ton of excitement out there.
You want to hear a stat?
Sure.
So State scored 262 points total last year, right? That's not a very good number. 150 in the non-conference games. In conference play last year, I mean, we knew this, but let's just throw it out there. 14, they had 30 against South Carolina. 17, 7, which was a win. 13, 3, 10, 7. So after they scored 30 points on South Carolina, the rest of the way in the remaining, what would that have been, six conference games, they scored 24, 37, 40, 50, 57 points.
Yuck.
I mean, that's just gross. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm able to get 14 more points per game out of Jeff Lebby and get this number up closer to, you know, 450 points scored, you're going to win some games doing that. I mean, you're going to get six wins almost guaranteed. So, Heupel's first year, Lebby's first year. I'm interested to see how many parallels we end up having. So, all right, tomorrow's show is live at the Fan and Mart in I say tomorrow's show. I mean, yep. It's Friday's show, but we'll be there on Thursday at the Fan and Mart in Flowood. Please come out and join us. We are still TBA on some guests. We've got some potential guests, but nobody is locked in. Hopefully, we'll have some folks show up. If not, well, Robbie and I, you can just sit there and watch us eat. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But looking forward to eating some fried catfish on the Superior Catfish Tour and talking with you guys and meeting up with you in our capital city. So talk to you soon. Hopefully you come out and say hello. Please do. Until then, for Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Mississippi Media Production.